This is Marketing Reads, a Chinese consumer connection where we look at books related to marketing in China. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports. Book into the library, and it's actually a very interesting one for researchers, both from the perspective of describing a luxury segment of the China market, which actually I think is what gets most of the attention these days, but also looking at research methodology and the approach of research into Chinese consumer behavior in China. The book is titled Elite China, Luxury Consumer Behavior in China. The author is Pierre Xiao Lu, and the publisher is John Wiley & Sons, Asia. So it must be the division in Asia. And I was a little bit surprised to see this book actually published by a mainstream popular press, John Wiley & Sons. It kind of reads like a paper that would be in a university press book or a book. I think it's a little bit not enough to make up its own book. It's certainly enough to be part of a research book. So I'm a little bit surprised to see it in this context. So kudos to Professor Liu for getting that in there, Dr. Liu for getting that out there. I suspect it's all part of the piling on of Chinese books lately and the Chinese market, and publishers are just anxious to get anything they can, and maybe there's not a lot out there, so they grab what they can. I'm not putting the book down. It's a good book. What I mean to say is I'm surprised it's in this publishing house rather than a university press. So I don't want this to scare away researchers thinking, well, John Wiley, how could they have a real research book like this? On the other hand, I don't want to discourage people who are looking for more of an introduction, because it does have that part. So I think actually Pierre's done a good job, a good balancing act. It was published in 2008. I think the one I have is actually printed in Singapore, so maybe it's more easier to obtain in Asia. Let me go over the chapters, and there's not many chapters, which really helps you see the book is really quite focused. Chapter 1, Luxury Consumption and China's Elite, and that we just get basically introduction. Chapter 2, The Confused Concept of Luxury. Love this chapter, really sets the context well. Chapter 3, Consumer Value Systems in the 21st Century China. Chapter 4, A Typology of Chinese Luxury Consumers, and this is where we get Pierre's research results. Chapter 5, Habits, Lifestyles, Locations. And Chapter 6, Opportunities for Chinese Luxury Brands. Opportunities, talking more about case studies and what can be done in this market. So practitioners have something there. The book comes in at just over 200 pages, so it's kind of reads to me like it could be a PhD thesis that's maybe balanced a little bit more, put in a few more case studies, something like this, maybe expanded a little bit, not so technical. All of the technical data is taken and moved to an appendix in the back, which I really did not like because I wanted to read the data supporting the assertions that were being made in the book. I suspect that the editor or someone at John Wiley said, look, you got to move that stuff out of here. It's too confusing for the regular reader. So in that way, the book tries to target a more mainstream reader, but I don't think it's quite there. I think it's much more a business researcher's book. And so I wanted that stuff, and I had to wait or jump back and forth, and it wasn't too convenient. But it is there. All the data is definitely there. Let me jump into the book a little bit and talk about some of the things I really like about the book. The book starts out quite well. You know, it seems to be standard fare. You have to get a history of China these days, and the book doesn't really do that. It touches it. It references a little bit, not too much. But one of the main messages that come across at the beginning of the book is that there is this elite market. There is a luxury consumption going on. And who are these people in China? What's going on? Who are they? How do they behave? What are some of these questions we can ask? So it sets the context. But what I really like is chapter 2, where Pierre comes out and says, you know, this is not so straightforward. And anyone who's spent time in a mainstream living situation in a Chinese context, I mean, you don't need to travel far to see that Chinese consumers are extremely frugal. And this frugalness goes towards their family orientation, where that money is saved up for certain things to be done within the family, such as investments or education or things like this. And so spending wildly is not something that's often done. Families play a really important role in this, and of course, just think about it for a second. If even for a Westerner, even for an American, if every time he or she bought something, she had to come back and answer to her parents, not only would that be uncomfortable, let's skip that part, uncomfortable, but it would, by its nature, discourage overspending and discourage impulse buying and discourage buying big items or extravagant items. It would just put a cold water on that. Think about it for a second. I'm not talking about the psychological preferences or the emotions. I'm just saying, if you did that, you reported everything back to your parents, what would happen? And Chinese do. I mean, they're so tied up in being close within the family, they do. Now, the problem with this is if you go visit China or you talk to your friends and you talk to an individual and ask them this, they won't tell you that. They won't say that's true. And this is one of the really difficult parts of intercultural research, because when an individual tells you something, they only tell you from their own perspective. And this plays out in the book a little bit, and I think it's a little bit of a weakness in some of the book, and I'll describe that in a second. But let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. I think it's very difficult to understand. I was teaching once in class many, many years ago, and I brought this point up about Chinese consumers often involve their family in their consumption process and in the purchasing process. And thus, when they're purchasing, it's not only the one person making the buying decision. It often involves other people. Very often, older people, elders in the family, will have rejection power. You know, they'll have veto power, basically, over purchases. And I said that, you know, you could go out and buy, maybe you want to get a scooter, you go out and you buy some kind of racing motorcycle, you come home, and grandma will say, absolutely not, you got to get rid of that. And not everyone would get rid of it, but it would certainly be an important factor for many people. And a student, a male student, raised his hand and objected to this. He said, no, that's just not true, that I can buy whatever I want. And I said, well, what do you think would happen if you went out and bought a racing motorcycle then and brought it home? You live with your parents? And he said, yeah, I live with my parents, of course. And I said, well, what would happen? He said, well, I wouldn't do that. And so I don't think I convinced him of anything. But there's the point. It's, if you had asked him about the influences of family, he said, no, I'm free to do whatever I want. But of course, the things he wants to do fit into the existing limits and context of what the family finds acceptable. And so this is what makes this kind of research difficult. Now, of course, in this case, we're not doing cross-cultural research. Professor Liu is reporting on a single population within China, luxury consumers. But he's reporting it in English to readers who have a different perspective. So sometimes the words don't exactly mean what you may assume they mean, and that's a little bit of a little problematic in the actual findings. In any case, let me jump back to the book, because I think there are really some great context that does come out in the book, some great observations, and let me see if I can find a good one here. I think that in the beginning of the book, who are luxury consumers is done very well. We get a good grasp of that. And I have to say that I was a little bit put off to start the book, because this is not my area at all. I'm much more at the mass consumption level. I want to see what the majority of consumers are doing. And if I do look at a subpopulation, I want to actually look at a subpopulation that's doing something to get by or something at an even more minimum monetary level. Here what we're looking at is consumers in China with just, you know, too much money to spend, basically. These are people who are really doing well. Professor Dr. Liu does do a good job, though, to bring us back to reality, because he actually gives you some of the numbers. And someone who's a luxury consumer in China may have actually just a $5,000-$7,000 income per year. But the point is, they do go out and buy some luxury products maybe once or twice a year. So he's throwing these people in. It's not excluding them. It's not just the super, super high end. Although, to be quite frank, this is kind of the high end. China has developed this issue where you have very little middle class space. You've got people who are doing very well. But that very well also needs to be taken in the context of the Western terms, which would probably be nowhere close to the amount of money you're used to taking home, although your living expense in many ways is much higher than you would find in China anyway. So I'm getting all confused. Given that he does look at the market segment this way, it's not just super high-end. I kind of got more into the book, appreciated it more. And here's a little quote from the book, which shows, I really think, his perspective sometimes is quite good. For example, page 98, he says, "There was a great psychological distance between the luxury boutique and the consumers it sought to attract. Chinese consumers don't feel comfortable going into a French lifestyle luxury product store with a purely French style of decoration." And this is what I'm finding all the time. Now, here he's talking about luxury, but it's not just luxury. It's Build-A-Bear. I mean, it's almost any mainstream hypermarket from the West. It's Walmart. Look at what Walmart's done. Look at my Walmart show, how much they've had to change their interior, their service scape. So the point here is, he's saying, you can't just bring those luxury goods over. You can't bring those service scapes over and plop them down and expect something to happen. What we do see in the book is an emphasis that Chinese consumers who want to spend on luxury maybe have a little bit of a lack of opportunity at the beginning of this inflow of cash into China. And so what do? They, of course, need to buy imported luxury brands. And he does say, you know, having a domestic Chinese luxury brand is a very, very, very big challenge. It's hard enough to be a luxury brand. It's even harder to be a Chinese luxury brand, although they are moving on that. There are companies doing that. But you can't just bring those foreign brands and plop them down and expect something to happen. That's not going to work. And I really like that perspective here. He also points out on the very next page along with this, however, very few new luxury brands can afford to wait 10 years and have to reach break-even point as quickly as possible. A basic understanding of the ambivalence of Chinese luxury consumers is necessary if they are to find solutions to this problem. I love that, ambivalence. So I really think Dr. Liu has really done his homework. And of course, he's been out there. He understands these consumers. Now, as far as the findings go, he creates a typology, which is not completely surprising. I mean, it does follow some existing typologies in a general sense, but I love that it's applied specifically to the Chinese context. In his study, the reason it's good for researchers, I think, is you get to see a combination of research methodologies, which begin with a kind of projective, open-ended, qualitative approach, where we interview a number of consumers, develop some categories, and then from those categories, we then develop some more subcategories and details, and then using survey data, we then can contextualize that survey data within the categories we create or the typology. I would have really preferred, I think, that the typology be based on actual large-scale survey data. Instead, what he's done is he has the typology creates four main groups of luxury consumers. And then he takes the survey data and individually analyzes it based on those, on each group. So for example, he has one group is called luxury lovers. Another group is called luxury followers. So first, he made these groups based on the projective qualitative methodology results. Then he gave everyone a quantitative survey, but only luxury lovers' quantitative results were analyzed for that group. And then luxury followers were analyzed just for that group. Now, the problem with that is that it assumes that those initial groups are accurate, and then we're going to come out basically with means and standard deviations based on those. And that could be problematic. Of course, the solution to that is to say that the quantitative data is actually acting as a confirmatory analysis that brings in more detail also, and then we can do some between group testing, such as t-testing or ANOVA testing, and he does do some of that. So in the end, the groups do seem to be valid groups. So they're not really clusters. It's not cluster analysis. Like I say, it has this problem. You can't really label it clearly as being clusters or segments, but they are categories that were brought out from a kind of grounded theory approach. And I appreciate that. It's actually quite well done. It's just a little bit not quantitative, you know, power-wise. It's not a powerful quantitative study. It's also not a powerful qualitative study. It's kind of a compromise between both. So I'm afraid that could confuse some readers. But I liked it. It's very typical, I think, of the kind of approach we should take in this kind of context, because you don't have strong existing theory for the consumers in this context. That's what I'm always arguing about. One more issue I had with the book was he has these four segments. I just mentioned a couple: luxury lovers and luxury followers. And then another two are luxury intellectuals and luxury laggards. And these four groups are charted on two main axes. And one axis is individualist, collectivist. So these are kind of opposites, right? Individualist and collectivist behaviors. And then another axis is conspicuous consumption and functional consumption. So you can easily picture this. One axis is this idea that I do it for myself or I do it for the group. And another axis is I do it so people can see it, and I do it because it's functional, or I buy it because it's functional. And of course, what happens is you get consumers that are collectivist and conspicuous. That is, they are strong, they have strong values to collectivism, being in a group, being social, and of course their consumption tends to be for purposes of being conspicuous. So they want to show the brand, they want to let other people know what they're doing, they want people to see it. Opposite of this would be the quadrant where people are more functional and individualist. That is, they're thinking more along, how does this work for me, what does this do for me, and what are the actual functions? This is quite obvious, and I think it's easily has face validity. We can see this in a Chinese consumer context. The problem is, I think the axis called individualist collectivist, this almost could apply anywhere. I mean, you could put this into a European context, into an American context. It's just a matter of scale. And I think the word individualist is misleading, because I really don't think it makes it sound as if the consumers are individualist, and I really don't think they are. I think what we're talking more is this axis maybe, instead of individualist collectivist, should maybe be social and private. In other words, the collectivist would be social, and the individualist we would label private. I consume or I buy this more for private reasons. And I think that would reflect better on the actual situation, because Chinese consumers don't really have a lot of individualist consumption motivation, but they may have some private, doing a little bit for myself. But individualist just puts it a little bit too strong. That's a small thing that just bugged me a little bit. But it doesn't make any of the, it doesn't really change any of the results. It's just changing a label. And I think he does understand that. If you read the book carefully, you'll see that when he uses this word individualist, he's saying, hey, don't think of this word in the context of what Westerners normally think of individualist. And that's what I was referring to at the beginning of this review. You have to be careful that you don't take the words and just, you know, put them into your own understanding of consumer behavior. You need to step back a little bit and think, yeah, some of the words are similar and the models are similar, but you have to really watch out that we're talking about a Chinese cultural context, and that shifts all of the meaning. Okay, overall, I think it's a great book. At the end, there were case studies, and they were okay. I wasn't super excited by them. Maybe someone who's not so familiar would find these more helpful than I did. I just think they're a filler for the book. And at the end, all of the data and analysis is included, although I wish it was mixed in with the book a little bit better. As a follow-up note, just to end this, I think that if you look, if you do get your hands on the book and you look on page 201, where he kind of has the overall typology, I would argue that if we change those words individualist and collectivist to private and social, we really end up developing a general typology of Chinese consumption, which is something I'm working on too. In other words, luxury consumers do not act significantly different from Chinese consumers in general. And I think what Dr. Liu has stumbled on is actually a much more overall model or paradigm of behavior. But in this case, the specific examples are luxury goods. And that, in my case, what I'm talking about is this doing things conspicuously, socially. In his case, they're luxury lovers and luxury followers. In my case, this would be in the context of the zhōnào and the doing things in public this way, exciting and fun. And on the other hand, the opposite, his idea of the functional and individualist, which I would change to be functional and private, and I think this would be this kind of more quiet setting, doing things because it has an application. I use this in my research along with the idea of the Xianjing, and the Xianjing being the idea of this quiet and peaceful and recharge and do it for myself and have my private space. So I admire the book. I'm glad he got it out. And if you are a researcher, please take a look at it. If you're not interested in luxury goods or luxury consumption, you might actually be surprised by the findings and the application opportunity beyond the luxury goods. I certainly was pleasantly surprised. This is Marketing Reads, a Chinese consumer connection where we look at books related to marketing in China. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports.